Yes, good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, August 16, the Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio, and a very good morning to you wherever and however you're listening. Big week we've got coming up. Thursday night, we've got a grand final rematch between Penrith and the Bunnies. Also, Group 1 racing at Royal Randwick on Sunday, the Winx Stakes. And you've got up to 9 Group 1 winners nommed, including last year's winner, Mwanga. Enemo is the $2.50 favourite in the all-in market as it stands. So really ramping up the racing towards spring as we get to a Group 1 meeting at Randwick this weekend, Lozza, which really looking forward to when you see these good horses back.
I think that's what we all like, Mido, this time of year where we know that the big horses or the best horses are starting to make a return. And you mentioned some of those horses in the Winx Stakes this weekend. So it looks as though we're going to have a fine track out there at Randwick as well. Enemo and Mwanga and all these good horses starting to make a massive return. So we're in for a terrific spring. And I see that Les Bridge in the paper today is talking about the Everest being a two-horse race.
Gone early, Les.
He's gone very early. Nature Strip and Classique Legend. So, I mean, that's a race we're all looking forward to. Obviously, Nature Strip is the favourite, given what it did over in Royal Ascot. But Classique Legend sitting there on the third line of betting, well, second line of betting, actually, along with Marzu and Classique Legend and Eduardo on $8. So $2.80 favourite Nature Strip, but there's some good horses that will be locked in for that race and looking forward to the spring starting.
Clarkie, morning to you, mate. Another club we didn't really discuss yesterday has been in the news a lot in the time you were away with the Newcastle Knights.
Mm.
Dave Clemmer had an altercation with Hayden Knowles, the trainer, and excuse me, but he missed a week. And now Kalen Ponga's in the news with this video emerging yesterday of Ponga and Kurt Mann leaving a toilet cubicle. Now, there's no suggestion that anything other than the fact they were drinking while injured, or Ponga's got concussion and Mann a quad injury. Mm. So the Knights are investigating.
Yeah, morning, boys. Morning to our listeners. I think for starters, a lot of people will be disappointed that Ponga's out injured and he's out drinking. I think we've had this conversation a million times about a million different athletes. It's just the perception of it isn't fantastic, particularly being a senior player and a leader at that club. So I think there's going to be a few Knights fans already disappointed with Ponga. And then, obviously they're looking at, what are two guys doing in a cubicle together? I think his father came out and said he was sick, and Kurt Mann was there to, I'm assuming, rub his back or pull his hair out of his eyes. I don't really know, but yeah, it seems like this thing's not just going to fade away. I think Newcastle will look into it, and it's another distraction for the Knights and certainly for their coach, who's been under enormous pressure pretty much the whole season. The Knights have had a number of injuries again, like last year, and their performances are nowhere near where they need to be. So that always adds fuel to the fire as well. But yeah, it's not a good look from Ponga. And in the same breath, like the footage that I saw, that's a massive setup as well. Like, as, I don't know, was it the security or the owner of the pub, whoever it was that asked them to leave the bathroom, coincidentally there's someone standing there with a mobile phone videoing it. Mm. Even that, to me, I hate that stuff. That stuff is just out of control, and I'd like to know who that person was. I'd like that person's name to be, front and centre on the front page, and let's just follow their life around. Let's see what they're up to today at work and video their life. I'm sure it's not rainbows and butterflies and they're doing the right thing all the time as well. So on one hand, I know there's never an excuse as the athlete. You're in the spotlight and people want to know what you're doing. And everyone's got a mobile phone and there's a camera. But whoever films that is a disgrace, in my opinion.
Loz, Ponga revealed over the weekend he won't be back this year, at least for the Knights. So a lot of question marks now. Well, he's the club captain, so his captaincy will be called into question after this, considering he's obviously battling the concussion situation, wants to be available for the World Cup. Apparently, I wonder how Mal Meninga will look at all this, but I wonder what sort of, well, the club is investigating, but what sort of repercussions he could be facing for this. Because it's just, it's an optics thing, isn't it?
No, it's not a good look at all, Mido. You know, your club's playing on the Saturday night, you're getting beaten up by the Brisbane Broncos and you're out celebrating with a teammate in a cubicle. There's a couple of things. Obviously, one, they shouldn't have been drinking while they were injured. And if they were going to do that, they should have stayed at home and done it rather than being out and about. And the other one is Kalen suffered some serious head knocks over the last month or so. And I don't know whether it's in his best interest to be drinking on top of the concussions that he sustained. And the other one is that the Knights have invested in him long term and they trust him to be the leader and the setter of standards. And he's not delivering on that promise we know he has as a player. Every time he plays for Queensland, he plays well. He hasn't delivered for Newcastle, and there's been a number of reasons probably why. You know, he hasn't played a lot of footy for Newcastle over the last 2 years. He's had injuries and concussions, but, you know, I don't know whether he was the right person to actually be given the captaincy role right from the start. I don't know whether he enjoys captaincy. I'm unsure, but it's something that, when you take on that role as being captain, there's a lot of responsibilities that come with it. And as a young man, he's probably not ready for it at the moment. But, you know, for me, it's all about Kalen doing the right thing, million-dollar player, setting the standard at a footy club. He hasn't delivered on that. And the Knights, if they take the captaincy off him, it's probably a good decision.
This is one of those ones that you can't win by sticking up for the player. No matter what we sit here and say, like for me, and I'll get smashed for this as well. I don't see it as that big a thing. Like he hasn't hurt anybody else. He's only hurt himself by what he's done. But this is one of those situations you cannot stick up for the player. You know, even if, like I say, I don't think it's that big a thing, but unfortunately for Ponga, it's the perception, it's the look of it, it's the team's not playing well, he's their captain, he's their best player, he's out injured. As Loz said, you know, that whole shouldn't he be drinking alcohol, like it's just, unfortunately for Ponga, I think this is just going to be one of those examples where put your hand up, cop your punishment, apologise to your fans, and move forward as quickly as you can, you know. I could sit here and give you 1,000 worse examples of what players are doing every single day in all different sports, and yet they get away with it. Yet, unfortunately, I'm wasting my breath.
It just exacerbates everything that's going wrong with the Knights, this, because like, I got a couple of messages from mates, Newcastle mates that I know last night. The big issue they've got with Kalen Ponga, and, you know, a fair bit of it's not his own, in fact, it's not his own fault, is his availability, number one. When they're paying X amount for that player and they're not getting him available enough of the time.
Well, I think he played 15 games last year, 14 games this season, or the other way around, whatever it is.
So this on top of that.
So this on top of that. But again, it's just a perception. Your team's up there getting beaten by the Brisbane Broncos.
Yeah.
You're being ruled out for the season with concussion. Your teammate's with you who's recovering from an injury. You shouldn't be out drinking.
Yeah.
And the perception is you don't care. You don't care about the footy club. Yet you're on $1 million a season. You're the leader of that club. I don't know whether Kalen's the right person to be a leader for that club. You'd have to ask him and ask the Newcastle players and the administration whether he wants that role and truly knows what leadership is. But when you're paying him that amount of money to be a leader, he's the one that has to set the standards.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the standard of being out on the drink when your team's playing and you've been ruled out for the rest of the season, it's just not a good look. So it's just not a good look. And then when you leave the cubicle, you're coming out with your glass. I don't know. For me, Newcastle will investigate it. I don't know what decision they will come up with, but they need to sit down with Kalen and say, mate, we're investing in you. We believe that you can take us to a grand final and win a competition. We've got loyal supporters up here who expect a lot, and we're not seeing that. And our standards at the moment are substandard.
The other issue Knights fans have with Caelan Ponga is the fact he comes out in Origin 3 as man of the match.
Oh, he's a freak when he plays for Queensland. That's the biggest problem, I reckon. Everyone gets to see how good he is, how talented he is, and that creates expectation. The Knights fans, and rightly so, when you pay that sort of cash, you want to see the best in the athlete as regularly as possible.
Particularly when you're making captain.
And then add leadership. But even again, like the fight that went down for Newcastle to try and keep Ponga, you know, that's why the fans, like there would have been, you know, call it 50% of the fans that would say he's not worth the money, let him go. Knights fight, keep him. So those fans say, rightio, we're going to back the board and the Knights and stick with Ponga. And then, you know, he makes an error in judgment like this. So, yeah, I think there's a lot worse happening in all sports. But I also get that, you know, when you're a leader of a team, there's huge expectation. And unfortunately for Ponga, and it probably makes it worse that he's with another injured player as well. Mm. It's nearly like you're
dragging him along.
Yeah, like you're taking the youngster with you. You're the captain. You should be going the other way saying, mate, you probably shouldn't be out drinking. Mm. But, yeah, anyway, like I said, I think from Ponga's perspective, mate, whatever punishment you get, eat it.
And it's long-term health as well. You just don't know the ramifications of suffering these head knocks in the short space of time. And to be out drinking, I'm sure the doctors would have told him to stay away from alcohol at least for a number of weeks to get yourself right. So I don't know what the long-term effect that will have on him. But for me, again, if he wanted to have a drink, stay at home and have a drink. No one knows. But to be out in the public and do it and then, you know, to get yourself into that state, it's very, very bad look. And you're the captain. You're on $1 million a year. You've got an injured player with you. You're the leader. And it's basically like you're encouraging him to come along. Now, I think we've all made mistakes in the past. And I'm sure I would have done it. Well, I did do it when I was playing football. But times have changed. The expectations have changed. It's a professional sport. And as a leader, he should have known better.
Gee, it's a blow up, this grand final venue situation. Still not locked in, a matter of weeks away from the grand final. And the front page of the Daily Telegraph, what a grand farce. Ham-fisted stadium leak blows up in Dom's face. So the commission has a meeting today, and no doubt the grand final venue will be front and centre. There's still, let's face it, a blow up between the NRL and the state government over the stadium deals and therefore the grand finals being held up, or at least the announcement of the grand final venues being held up. There was a report on Seven last night that it would be staying in Sydney, and Peter Vallandis, the ARL Commission Chairman, said there hasn't been a decision made yet, so the commission will meet today. But I think we've said all along, ANZ or a core stadium now, 82,000, Suncorp 52,000. Was in Queensland last year. I think it'll end up in Sydney. Some concessions might be made in regards to stadium deals, Loz, but I'll tell you what, they'd be pretty feisty meetings, those ones, at the moment.
I reckon they would be, There's probably two things that the commission are looking at. One is the financial aspect of taking the game away from Sydney, but also, them in discussions with the government holding up their side of the agreement. We know that the New South Wales government have backed down or reneged on their agreements to upgrade suburban stadiums. We know that Peter Vallandis and the commission aren't happy with that. But I think it just comes down to pure finances and making sure that the best decision is made in the best interest of the game and what the game can obviously get out of the government as well, because they're not happy. I think a lot of clubs were relying on this government grant that was going to set up their centre of excellences and improve their home venues and all sorts of things for community asset. So, we'll see what comes from that commission meeting today, but he wasn't happy with it being leaked by the sounds of things, if in fact it is going to be in Sydney. Mm.
On the back page of the telly, well, we've just spoken about it. The house party's over. Here's the headline there. Captaincy crisis. And the story in regards to the video that emerged with Caelan Ponga and Kurt Mann walking out of a bathroom cubicle together on Saturday evening there in Newcastle.
Yeah, you know, on this one, so again, there wouldn't be too many people on the planet that don't think there was something more going on in that bathroom. So tell me how it works in and around out of competition drug testing. Even if there's the, you know, this perception, why doesn't, is it ASADA or WADA? I don't know who it is in rugby league. Why don't they just, why can't you walk in and drug test them now?
That might be one for Denny Widler later this morning. I'm not sure. Well, the Players Association and the NRL would have come to some sort of agreement in
whether
that
regard.
Whether
you can or can't do that.
Yes.
Okay. But so to me, it seems sure like we've had a number of instances, you know, since I've been on this show, where to me, it actually, you don't even need to ask the player. If there's any, and I'm not using this as the only example. If there's any doubt at any stage, why can't, you know, I remember, I was playing for Australia, Cricket Australia organised their own drug test as well. So we did have ICC or we did have ASADA, but then Cricket Australia also had the right to just randomly drug test you as well.
Yeah, I know the clubs can do their own personal drug testing and they don't have to release the results. You know, but there's other testing.
Mate, even hair testing, I think it, like if you take something, if you take, I don't know if it's performance enhancing or social drugs, hair testing, they can trace back up to 6 months.
6 months, yeah.
I don't know whether,
I'm assuming.
Well, because I would imagine that makes this different. If we're saying Caelan Ponga has done drugs or hasn't done drugs, surely the situation's different then.
I don't know what the collective bargaining agreement is with the Players Association, the NRL. They would have some arrangement there you might be able to target test someone.
Yeah, okay.
But then again, that you mightn't have the opportunity to target test. You've got to go to the club. You've got to set up your drug testing then and call out 10 players randomly. I just don't know. And I think that's how they used to do it. Certainly when I played, they would arrive en masse at the ground and then everyone's name would be in a hat and then they go, bang, pull out the names. They wouldn't come and just go, right, we want to test you. We want to test you. Yeah. It would all be done
randomly. And on the back page of the Herald, Ponga toilet incident to put tests on NRL radar. This story talking about, well, potentially bringing hair follicle testing into the game. Again, that's something that would have to be worked out between the Players Association and the NRL. But again, there's no suggestion, though, at this stage that Caelan Ponga and Kurt Mann were engaging in that activity, and the Knights are investigating. But at the moment, all we know is they were found in a toilet cubicle together and were told to get out. So by security there in Newcastle on Saturday night. Now, on the back page of both papers as well, no rest for star Rabideau, Mitchell okay on the telly, the Herald. The Australian, not 100%, but Latrell's set to play. So he didn't finish training yesterday. A big game, of course, Thursday night at a Core Stadium, Bunnies and Panthers. He left Redfern with ice on his groin. Bunnies have won 6 of their last 7. They're now going for a top 4 spot. They're favourites for this game, Loss. $1.65, Penrith $2.25. A long time since Penrith have been underdogs for a game, it feels like. So,
round 1. Round one was the last time they were underdogs for a game. And they played Manly, and it was off the back of just having Nathan Cleary missing. And they started underdogs. And Tommy T was obviously playing in red hot form last year. So Manly started favourites in that game, and they haven't started as an underdog all season since round one. So they come into this game off the back of a loss to Melbourne last weekend. Look, South, I'd be taking no risk with Latrell Mitchell. I mean, he's important to them, and more than likely they're going to finish outside the top four. I know they're still pressing for a top four position, but if he's in any doubt whatsoever, I think you rest him. You get his body in the best possible shape in the lead-in or the run-in to the finals. They win a couple of games, one game, they play finals. I wouldn't be taking a risk with Latrell. I know he's got a tight groin at the moment, but again, their physios will look at him. I don't think they'll risk him if he's not 100% fit. But they'll need him if they're to beat Penrith. Penrith are under strength, we know that. But if Latrell plays, I think they get the job done.
We're going to head over to the UK shortly and catch up with the Sun football journalist Alan Nixon to get all the mail there on the Premier League. In the third week in, 2 weeks gone so far over there in the Premier League. We'll get the latest on Ange Postecoglou and Celtic as well. They had a big win on the weekend also. But Clarkey, day two back yesterday, full of beans. Bit more difficult today.
I'm nowhere this morning. 2:15 I made it to.
But it's a test match, mate.
Yeah, I know. I'll get through. I'll find a way. Probably shot a coffee, can of Red Bull, whatever it takes to get me through the next couple of hours. But yeah, I'm hurting a little. I'm a fraction off this morning. Mm. Just a little sleepy Lukey.
What'd you take when you were playing then? Like
to
the
sleep?
Yeah.
No, I was good. I'm a good sleeper. Yeah, it's just jet lag, that's all. I got my daughter back last night who's six, so that doesn't help either.
Right.
But yeah, it's just at the moment I'm exhausted at 7:30. Didn't go to sleep straight away.
That'd be hard.
Yeah, you normally get back to the hotel around midnight and then, take a couple of hours to calm down. Yeah. Probably more so when I was captain because your brain's, you're thinking field placement, bowling changes, how many overs left, right? Like your mind's going. So it just took a couple of hours for that to shut off. But in general, I normally go to sleep easily. My problem is when I wake, I can't get back to sleep.
Yeah, right.
So,
especially if you had a loss too.
Oh, if you had a loss, it was always harder.
Yeah.
It was harder to go to sleep and you have nightmares and you can't get back to sleep.
That bowling change, why didn't I do it?
Especially if the captain, especially if you're the one who's cost your team with a bad decision. You wanted to play the next day.
Yeah.
I thought after every game we lost, I was like, oh, I wish we were playing tomorrow. Just that feeling in your gut. And yeah, especially when you've made a mistake. And that happened plenty of times.
Wouldn't have happened too many times.
Happened a bit. Yeah, wrong decision, wrong selection, wrong time, bring a bowler
selections,
back.
Wrong batting order,
wrong shot, you play the shot, get out, or run someone out, cost you the game. Yeah, there was plenty of those days.
Okay, time to go to the UK, and joining us now is football journalist for The Sun, Alan Nixon. Alan, hello, how are you?
Yeah, I'm just amazed that these sporting men of steel actually sleep. I didn't think they needed it. I thought,
well, mornings like today, buddy, we feel like we don't.
Appreciate catching up again, Alan. And I guess the big story over in the Premier League at the moment is the plight of Manchester United. Bottom of the table for the first time in 30 years. I mean, you've witnessed and reported on some dark times since Sir Alex Ferguson left the club. Is this their lowest ebb?
I think it probably is. I think it's the complete confusion at every level of the club is there for everybody to see now, and there's nowhere to hide. Mm. And everybody's talking about Brentford 4-0 at the weekend. Let's not forget, that was before half-time, and Brentford took it easy on them in the second half. Or we really could have been talking about some form of humiliation. So it's desperate. It's desperate. I mean, I still don't know why Eric Ten Hag got the job. It was only because it was cheap and convenient, which for Manchester United is a disgrace. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all analysing it. We're all trying to figure out where it's gone wrong. And you know what I think? I think it's the same malaise that's faced in a lot of industries. Middle management is the problem. It's not actually the Glazers. The Glazers have put money in. It's the people who spend it for them and who make the decisions who are the ones who've really let the club down here. And the terrible decision to pick Ten Hag ahead of Pochettino, and when you could probably have got Conte, because he wasn't exactly settled at Tottenham. That's the kind of thing. That's where the club's going wrong. They're afraid to appoint strong people who've got opinions and might stand up for themselves.
Alan,
and seeing that on the pitch.
What's happened to, for me, United, under Sir Alex Ferguson were always a club that was about not just being at the top of their game every year, but it was bigger, it was deeper than that. It was bringing young, you know, Manchester players through, local boys through. Yeah. It was always a vision to the future and being successful over 5, 10, 15, 20 years. At the moment, I know the manager's always going to cop it, but even now in criticism, it seems like we're saying not the right manager. Like every single manager that gets employed. But what's happened to the vision of this club in, let's set a structure and foundation so we produce talent for the next 20, 30 years?
Well, what happened, I think, is that it wasn't just Fergie. Fergie was an old school manager who wanted to have his hands in everything at the club. Yeah. The first team, the reserves, the youth team.
Yeah.
He knew the lot. They don't make people like that anymore. But he'd also be the first to say that in a chairman, in David Gill, he'd an experienced man who knew football, who knew when to pull him back occasionally, rein him in, and when to let him go and be himself. And that relationship, and it was a relationship, is something I've never had since. Mm. Because when the Glazers came in, they brought in a financial guy, Ed Woodward, who just couldn't control Fergie at times. Mm. And I don't think Ferguson was ever really a guy who looked up to the people above him. He would go straight to the Glazers rather than MD in between. Now, Woodward's brought in a succession of managers. In fact, don't forget, Fergie picked his own successor in David Moyes. In what other sport would that happen? Mm. The outgoing manager says, look, go and take him. Surely, if you've got executives, they should make that decision. Because if they can't, why are they executives? And it's been that way ever since. It's been silly ideas. Let's bring in Van Gaal. Let's give up Solskjaer a shot. Ryan Giggs got a shot as well. It's mind-bending. And I don't know who interviewed Ten Hag. He might be a great coach, but he's got no personality. And if you're going to go into a club like Manchester United, even if it's a swagger, even if there's a little bit of BS involved, you've got to come across as the leader. You've got to be the guy that people look up to. And even in this day and age, when players are millionaires, they've also got to be a little bit afraid of you. Now, again, I don't want to use Conte all the time, but look at Tottenham under Conte, how they've changed. They got rid of the ones that weren't pulling their weight. He's improved the players there that needed a nudge. And they all look at him and they know, if I don't behave myself here, if I don't run 100% every week, I'm not playing next Saturday.
Alan, what did you make of that little scuffle? Well, sorry, mate. What did you make of that little scuffle on the sideline between Tuchel and Conte?
Marvellous. I didn't expect them to audition for Strictly Come Dancing. It was quite something. I love it. I think it's great to have personalities like that in the game. Tuchel, you know, has got a little bit of edge to him, and we know Conte's a firecracker. But you'd be happy to have either those guys in charge of your team because they've got a bit of life. Mm. I couldn't see Eric Ten Hag doing that. He'd probably go for a quiet waltz with you. look for a little bit of fisticuffs. That's great. That kind of thing's magic. I think Klopp's got that in him as well. He's got an edge. He knows when to start a bit of a rammy in the touchline if things aren't going well and get the place stirred up. Football's an emotional game. And it's great to see emotional. No, look, nobody got hurt, did they?
No.
You know, nobody got punched yesterday. Nobody went for stitches. So it was great to see that element of passion at a football match. And long may it continue. As long as it's genuine, you don't want it staged or somebody just trying to be a bit silly. But when you get a last-minute equaliser in the controversial circumstances, I'm not surprised it kicked off like that. And I've got to say, if you watched that and you didn't chuckle, you've not got a sense of humour.
Yeah, no, loved it. Interesting at the moment, we're seeing Liverpool 1-0 down at Anfield against Crystal Palace, and Darwin Nunez has been sent off as well, a red card after he hit the post earlier. But Arsenal have made a really strong start. Manchester City have won their first two games. Can you see, I guess, a challenger to City and, well, Liverpool struggling just right at the moment, but can you see someone perhaps surprising up at the top of the ladder this year, Alan?
I still see Manchester City and Liverpool as being clear, and both of them have spent the big money in Haaland and Nunes, and both will actually have to adjust the way they play. But I think in general they've got too many good players not to get it right. I do think Chelsea and Tottenham will do well, and they'll be relatively close. But I tell you the big challenge this season for all these clubs, is the number of games in a hurry before the World Cup. And not just that, you've also got the Champions League games in a really mad, congested part of the season. So it's the clubs with the big squads. And I think that's where Manchester City will once again edge it. I don't think Liverpool have got the depth, but they'll still be the main challengers. Chelsea have still got a bit of signing to do. Once it's all settled down, I think they'll be fine. Tottenham, for me, I don't think they've got a big enough squad either. So just simply in terms of endurance and getting through all these mad games we're going to have, I think that come that World Cup break, City might just be clear, and I don't think they'll get caught.
We take quite a bit of interest in what's going on in Scotland, particularly with Celtic and Ange Postecoglou.
So you should.
Yeah, tell us how his star, I guess, has risen after he was essentially ridiculed when he first got the job.
Well, do you know what? I mean, what a job this fella has done. When he first came in, it was in a Manchester United state of disarray. You know, the chief executive had left, the manager had gone, they were short of players. And the guy came in and basically had to roll up his sleeves and get dirty. And at the start, it was very, very difficult for the guy. And I think by accident, because I don't know quite how they came to appointing Ange in the first place, and that's not being disrespectful, but by accident, they've got themselves a real gem there, a real worker. And I think the fact that from day one, he told it straight and he didn't kid on with them, this was going to be a hard job. He let the fans know. And he used the fans to G up the club and make sure that he was being backed in the transfer market and he got players in. And he's built a team, very exciting, and a team that's now really, I think, the big test for him now is going to be the Champions League. Because, look, there's no doubt it's Celtic or Rangers for the title once again. I mean, these games are becoming practice matches against the lesser teams. The big test for him is going to be the Champions League. They didn't really do so well in Europe last year. And Rangers got to the Europa League final. So that's just a little bit of an itch they've got to scratch. But that will be very, very interesting to see how he does in the Champions League qualifiers. Because quite rightly, as champions, they're now in the group stage. And we'll see what they're all about. And I think with him in charge, with big crowds at games at home at Parkhead, which is a magnificent venue for European matches, I think that will be a very, very interesting time for him this season. And look, he's taken every other challenge in his stride. You cannot see how well he's done in the space of a year. Because as you say, when he first came in, people thought, he's going to be gone because this is too much. Mm. And the job was too big for most. But he just has that kind of slightly stubborn attitude, hard-working attitude, like, come on, let's get on with it. And if you doubt me, I'll show you. And he certainly has.
Alan, we really appreciate your time as always. Thanks so much.
And hope you have a good night's sleep, Clarkie.
Thank you, buddy.
Anytime.
Now, with Alan Nixon there from The Sun, drama certainly at Anfield this morning. Liverpool and Crystal Palace. Liverpool have just equalised just after the hour mark. Luis Diaz.
You okay?
And,
you're right now?
Well,
you've been down all
can
morning.
Someone get this on in here somewhere? We've got 48 screens in here.
What about looking at the stats? Liverpool have had 75% possession.
Oh, Crystal Palace will just go there and park the bus. Try and hit them on the break.
They've had all the ball.
Yeah.
Chin up, Liverpool.
Just trying to
come
stop
on, Palace.
Liverpool from scoring.
2-1 Palace, please.
But 20 shots at goal Liverpool have had.
The big off-season signing, Darwin Núñez, in his first full debut there at Anfield, sent off. And it looks like he might have... Well, shoved his forehead, I'm just reading from the BBC here, shoved his forehead into an opponent's jaw area.
We call that a headbutt in Australia. Shoved his forehead into an opponent's jaw.
Yeah, that'll do it to you. That'll get you a red card.
Same, same, but different.
Yeah, so he was sent off, and then 5 minutes later, equaliser. So one all. Mm. What else are you seeing there, Loz?
No, anything I'm just else? Looking at the numbers, Mido. I just can't believe that it's one all. Liverpool should be in front by more, going on stats.
We have several texts here suggesting that it might be time for Manchester United to approach Ted Lasso to manage or coach the club, Loz. And I confess, I haven't watched it, which apparently it's fantastic.
Oh, it's
but
a great show. Yeah, it's a great show. Yeah. It's American college football coach. He's hired to go and coach an English soccer team. And without sort of going into it too much, the owners of the soccer club have had a bad divorce. And she basically wants the club to not do very well. So she hires this bloke from America who's known
and they win.
Yeah.
I've got to watch this. This sounds right up my alley.
And he's got some quirky ways about him, but he just finds the connection with the team.
Okay, brilliant. We'll get him over there at United, apparently, some of our listeners are saying. Now, I was thinking the other day, gee, we haven't heard from this bloke for a while. The Narc. Morning, Narc.
Hey, it's not my bloody fault. I ring up, they don't put me there. Hey, Clarky.
I can't see why they wouldn't put you to air, Narc.
You're an absolute...
Can't see why.
Where were you on the shores of...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Look at him, Jamie. Hey, were you just hobnobbing over there in your bloody super yacht? You weren't on the shores with Jamie, were you?
No, I wasn't.
You could have said hello. Where would you? You could have been in a boat, couldn't you? You bloody lousy sod. Hey, over there, bloody sunning yourself. Hey, Firmino, Daly, hey,
yep.
He told you yet? Next year, he's the new Matt Burke on Carl on Today. He's been a new sports guy with his brother-in-law. Hey, hey, you're going to stuff these guys up in the morning. You'll be sitting up there on Today. Oh, here we go. Clarkie, what's Today on Sport? And there you'll be all up there. Hey, you're going to dump these guys, aren't you?
Yeah, he will.
He will in a minute. He'll drop you so...
No, you know what? He's got a watertight contract here, Narc. We're not letting him go.
Hey, what a contract's worth, Loz. Hey,
well, no, that's fair point.
They're worth nothing. Hey, two men walk into a toilet together. That's the problem. Nothing else. I don't care what's happened inside the toilet. The problem is two men walk into a toilet together. And yesterday, Loz, you're talking about shooey. What about the king of the shooey? Daniel Ricciardo sucked in. Hey, the king of the shoey. And you said your hero yesterday, Ben Cunnington.
Yep.
My God, is he everybody's commentator's worst nightmare? Can you imagine somebody, Ben Cunnington?
Yes, I know where you're going there, Narc. I know where you're going, yes.
Everybody's worst nightmare, I'm telling you that. And with Jamie. Now, listen, I'm not having a go at Jamie, right?
Right.
I'm not having a go. But.
But.
But. Look, 11-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 71, a 73 can all do the Index Channel, right? So when 100, I think there's over 300 Australians have done it. Now, listen, I went in this city to surf the other week on Sunday.
No, you didn't.
I did.
You went in or you ran?
Ran it. 60,000 people in it, so it's not special, is it? So she was saying they were lining up like bloody Everest. Everybody, Tom, Dick, and Harry can bloody climb Everest these days, can't they? Because you've got bloody people carrying their bloody stuff. So listen, and it was a good achievement.
Why so fast? Why are you in a rush? Why are you in a rush for now?
I've got to get on the bloody news, don't I?
Slow down, mate.
Not when you're a bloody Today. In bloody, yeah, that'll be you. Hey, you know that song?
I'm more of a sunrise man myself.
You know the song You're So Vain? That was after you, Clark.
Yeah, look, thanks, buddy.
Going around getting your art.
Knock.
Hey,
6:30. It's 6:30, buddy.
10 minutes plus change left at Anfield this morning in the Premier League. And Liverpool and Crystal Palace still 1-1. In a pretty dramatic match there. I'll tell you what, though, Palace, even though they're a man up, because Liverpool recruit Darwin Nunes sent off, as many have pointed out on the text line, just a little Liverpool kiss to one of his teammates. So he's, as it's eloquently described on the BBC, his forehead came in contact with one of his opponent's jaw area. So he was given a straight red card. And 1-1, then Liverpool scored down to 10 men, scored 5 minutes later, just after the hour mark, Luis Diaz, and 1-1 after Wilfred Zaha scored early for Palace. Yesterday, Will Zalatoris ended up winning that playoff in the St Jude Championship. You should have seen his shot, fellas, at the third playoff hole. Now, this is luck. This is absolute luck. So he's hit it. Surely going in the water, just nestles in.
The paver has saved him.
the paver saved him.
Lucky bounce, Mido.
What that did, because...
How's he hit the ball? He's like the ball's under the grass, though. How's his next shot? How's he get it out of there?
Well, what he ended up doing, because who was he in the playoff with? Straka hit it in the water. So then Straka went back and hit it from the tee shot again. He hit it in the bunker. So what he decided to do, because yeah, he had just about an impossible lie there, Zalatoris, he then decided to take a penalty as well and went back to the tee.
Go again.
And he went on the green. And then he just putted in. So whereas Straka went after bunker. He hit it in the water, put it in the bunker.
Tough
hole. So it was, very dramatic finish to that tournament there yesterday as well. And if you're just tuning in, the news overnight, Aussie Cam Smith has pulled out of this week's BMW Championship with a hip injury. And he's apparently been dealing with this hip problem for several months. But we'll see him not this week, but next week in the FedEx Tour Championship finale in Atlanta, where the winner takes home somewhere around 25 million Australian. So he's saving himself for that, the world number two. Now, Loz's BSP countdown coming up shortly, but Clarkie, plenty of news. I haven't spoken a dime of cricket since you've been away, but yesterday, Cricket Australia unveiled a 5-year strategic plan and a big focus. Well, they want 2020 included for, well, if not the 2028 Olympic Games in Los Angeles, certainly by Brisbane for 2032. They'd love to get 2028, the ICC in particular, to really open up to that US market. I mean, it does nothing for me personally, the thought of having cricket at the Olympics.
I can understand why they want that, why cricket as a sport would want that, to, exactly like you said, to open themselves up to different markets. I don't think it's required, to be honest. I don't think it's needed. I don't think cricket should be at the Com Games or the Olympics. I think there's enough cricket being played these days. I think the only format you could take to Com Games or Olympics is 2020 cricket, and I think that is massive already. So I don't think it's going to help promote the game. I think it would just be about trying to play it in places that it's not as accustomed to what it is here in Australia or the UK or India. But yeah, I don't think the Olympics is... I don't think cricket is needed at the Olympics, but I can understand their reasoning. But that's just my personal opinion, to be honest.
Another story from when you're away, really sad one. Rudy Kurtzen dying in a car accident, age 73, naturally. Umpired in many tests.
Great man, too. And I think you would have seen a lot of people posted at the time, obviously thoughts with Rudy's family. But yes, a brilliant umpire, but what Rudy was a legend of a person. And I think, you know, I look back on... to someone like Rudy as an umpire, he was a great example where, yeah, he made as many mistakes as the rest of them, but you actually didn't bother you because of the way he handled certain situations, the way he spoke to you on the field, the way he treated you. He wasn't the school teacher. It wasn't that attitude. He was there to, yes, do his job, but he was also loved cricket, loved talking cricket, was a great guy to have out there on the field, certainly over a 5-day period. So I don't think there's too many more respected umpires that I played alongside than Rudy Kurtzen. Everyone loved him. And he was tough, Rudy. Tough South African, made it very clear if you stepped out of place, certainly as captain, he would grab you and let you know that, you know, your team or your player cannot speak like that on the field or act like that on the field. It was very hard, very honest, but what a great man. So yeah, devastating news.
That slow left raise of the finger.
You knew as well.
Did you make probably by the time I got all the way up, you're probably halfway back to the pavilion.
You already had your pads off. And you knew because Rudy was always same hand. You could just see it slowly and that you get, oh, you just start your walk before I got all the way up. But, yeah, had his own style, was a great guy. So you're way too young again. So sad. The other one that I saw, I actually saw Meg Lenning at the airport in Dubai on my way home from Europe. She was flying back to Australia as well and I guess disappointing is not the right word. Like, feel for her, Meg. You know, she's taking a break from cricket, which I think is unreal if that's what she needs and requires. But, man, she has been an absolute superstar. There wouldn't be too many players in the world that have achieved as much as Meg in the last 10 years. So I just hope for her sake and for cricket's sake that she does take the time away she needs and gets back on the field, because I think cricket will miss her, that's for sure. The Australian women's team will definitely miss her. She's a very, very good batter and a brilliant captain. And I think she probably hasn't got the amount of credit that she's deserved for the Australian women's team being on top of the world for such a long period of time. But, yeah, that was hard to read, actually. Or hard to hear when I was, yeah, when I landed back in Australia.
Yeah, Maggie Lenning's stats are unbelievable.
Mate, crazy. In all formats, too.
And just her captaincy as well. She's led Australia in 171 matches across all formats for 135 wins.
Mate.
That's an incredible strike rate, isn't it?
Yeah. And that, again, like now this Australian women's team, we've got a lot of experience and there's huge expectation around, you know, every time they play, they should be winning, which is fair enough because they're brilliant. But Meg was in charge a long time ago when these players were a lot younger. And she was, you know, it was her, the way she played, her style of play, her aggressive captaincy, that got the best out of the team. So I know now it looks like anyone could captain the Australian team, but, man, she's a superstar.
Okay, over to Loz. You've got the most important player other than a 1, 6, 7 and 9 out of the team still in semi-final contention.
Yeah, and I've sort of also left out the 13s because there's so many good 13s. I mean, if you wanted to, you could go Radleys, you could go Cam Murrays, you could go Isaiah Yeo's. So I've left the lock out as well, the 13. And all these players, they've got similar traits. And when they play well, usually their team does as well. So I'm just going to name them all because they all are similar type players. You've got James Fisher-Harris from Penrith, Jared Weir-Hargreaves from the Roosters. You've got Jason Taumalolo from the Cowboys, Brendan Smith from Melbourne, Junior Paulo from Parramatta, Toby Rudolph from the Sharks, Joe Tarpany from the Raiders, and Keon Koloamatangi from South Sydney. And they're all very strong with the football, so they all carry it well, whether it's through brute force, whether it's through footwork, or the ability to keep going when under fatigue. And the other thing I like about these players is they can get between players and they can you know, get a quick play the ball, but they also get you on the front foot. They can offload and they can get second phase play happening for you. So if you've got good halves or a good fullback that's up there pushing in support, or you like to move the football, you can. And I think offloading in today's game is so important because defensive structures are so good. So these players can get that second phase play going. It just creates havoc in the opposition defensive system. And they will always take a tough run and they're hard to put on the ground. So for me, that's traits that you're looking for from your from these players. And in defence, they've got good line speed for big men. They love the challenge to win contact, and that's another important part of their game, is to not only carry the ball strongly, but to set the line speed and set the agenda when it comes to you defending and making sure that you win the contact, you set the standard, you get forward and put the opposition under pressure. And they take that time and space away from their opponent. The other thing I like about all these guys is they've got a strong work ethic in all aspects of the game. And they, while they come up with those big carries and big shots in defence, they never neglect the little things in the game, which are so important to the team's identity. You know, things we talk about every week, like, you know, a kick pressure, talking about, you know, option running, where you continually push forward, then reload on the next play to get yourself involved and to take a number away from the opposition defensive system. So if you're carrying the ball, if Clarkie's carrying the ball, for instance, I've got to get back on his inside to support him. And it just takes away a number in defence from the opposition. So I like how they go forward, reload, go forward, reload. And they also, as a big man under fatigue, they cover their inside space very well. And they cover, if I'm defending next to someone, I cover their inside. So you always talk about being vulnerable as a big bloke when the ball goes past you, because you tend to clock off. And as soon as you clock off, you'll find the gap starting to open up between you and the next person, if they've started to drift across and you've not reacted, that space gets bigger and bigger as the ball goes past you. Then if there's a change of angle and they come back down through the middle or their inside ball or the fullback, then you can be exposed. But these players always, what they talk about is closing that gate. They shut down the space on the inside. And that's very, very important when you're defending through the middle of the field. So that's another thing I like about them. And they also inspire other players around them to a higher level. You know, they challenge each other to be good. They're not afraid of carrying that football. They're not afraid to make their defence strong. And they set the example for their team. And I think when you look at those players, you know, they mightn't say a lot, but they lead with their actions. And that's another important part of their game. The fact that they put their hand up week in, week out. You know, very rarely do they play poorly. They're always at least a 7 every week, and you're getting value for money.
And it's finished 1-1 at Anfield between Liverpool and Crystal Palace. And, Loz, there was another player, a few texts. Where are those? Where's your Broncos player?
Well, the Broncos player is Payne Haas. Sorry, I forgot to mention his name. But you were right onto it, listeners. So very, very well done for reminding me that I missed Payne Haas. Mm. But he's a similar type of player to all those other guys.
Adam Pengilly, good morning to you.
Morning, Jared. Morning, boys. What a pleasure to have the night back this morning, Clarky.
I missed him so much. Not.
You brought him back, though.
Oh, man. He's under me, isn't he? Where does he think I'm going? Today's show.
Mm.
Yeah. Oof, he's living in dreamless sport.
And he did the city.
The sport, he reckoned.
And he did the city to surf, so doing the English Channel is nothing.
No, to surf's just as hard.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Now, the Wink Stakes, looking forward to this. What, 9 Group 1 winners nommed, $2.50 NMO at the top of the market. Bring it on Saturday.
Yeah, outstanding nominations, Jared. A really good field it's going to shape up to be on the weekend. It's been a long time between Group 1 racing in Sydney, the first Group 1 race for the season, obviously. $2.50 for Animo. Well, it's short enough, isn't it?
Very.
Early markets, given the fact that I think we've probably seen last preparation. The horse probably takes a little bit to get into his stride each campaign, and he was really flourishing at around that 2,000 metres last campaign. We know he ran so well on the Cox Plate in the spring last year, and obviously, on that biased track, first up, last preparation, the expressway over 200 metres, he couldn't run down overpass. And then still in the Hobartville, he was good and he won, but it wasn't a convincing margin. So I wouldn't be diving into the short price. I think he's obviously an extremely good horse. I'll be waiting for him to get a bit further trip later in the campaign. But this race stacks up to be really good. I like the nominations. Steve Malunga back at the races, obviously. Ice Bath nominated there as well. Forbidden Love's got the run under her belt, even though she was extremely disappointing first up. So, yep, shaping up to be a really good race. Probably wouldn't be diving into the short price about Animo at this stage.
Big call, buddy, from Les Bridge about Everest, 2-horse race.
Yeah, Clarky, big call, wasn't it? Story with Ray Thomas in the Telegraph today. He must be seeing stuff at home that makes him extremely confident heading towards the Everest. It's always hard to know with these horses coming off these long-term suspensory problems or tendon problems where they actually get back to the races. But Les is saying that he's come back in fine fettle. His body shape's starting to change. His code's coming through. He's right on track for the Everest and thinks it's going to be a match race, basically. So remember when Lev said a couple of years ago, boys, he said, listen, nothing will beat this horse in the Everest. But a lot of people were sort of sniggering in the background thinking, well, really, Lev? Like, can this horse come out and win the Everest? And he did, and he won it comfortably under Karen McAvoy. So Lev's been around the block a few times. He knows his horse better than anyone else. And if he's saying this horse is going to be right in the mix for the Everest, well, then I'm going to believe him. So looking forward to seeing him in the trials in a couple of weeks' time. Probably have a couple of runs, hopefully, if all goes well, heading into the Everest in the shorts and then the Premier Stakes. And bring it on, I say.
Talking about the trials, did you see Converge trial yesterday?
Yeah, he was a star trialer for me there yesterday, Loz. I know he didn't win his trial and was beaten a fair distance, but he did it under an absolute stranglehold there in that first trial there at Warwick Farm for Tim Clark. So he's come back in really fine order, the Randwick Guineas winner, and obviously be very keen to see what Gay and Adrian sort of aim him at later in the campaign. He was beaten fairly comfortably by Animo in that Rose Hill Guineas and obviously didn't show up in the Doncaster, but I reckon they'll probably try and stick him to a mile again and maybe target a race like the Epsom potentially and see what sort of weight and get into that race with. But yeah, he'll come back in really good order. And in the Congo was the other sort of high-profile horse trialing there yesterday. He was pushed out to win his trial and under a little bit more pressure, albeit not under an enormous amount of riding last 100 metres. But definitely thought Converge was the horse I wanted to take out of the trials there at Warwick Farm yesterday.
Well, I suppose we wait to hear from the Chris Lee stable about what's next with Mugger 2, which unfortunately failed on Saturday as well, Adam.
Yeah, that's right, Jared. It was always going to be a fine line they were dancing, weren't they? If he came back in good order and ran well after that long-term problem with the tendon, then they're back in the game. But unfortunately, he didn't show up there on the weekend at Rose Hill. So a bit of an issue, I'd imagine, for the stable. They might give him a couple of weeks to try and get over that and see where they go. But as we've said many times in the past, Jared, these long-term injuries are extremely hard to get the horses back. And Mungatu, unfortunately, we'll have to wait and see. Might not be one that can get back to his full fitness and his peak performance.
Okay, thanks so much, mate. Have a good day.
See you, boys.